Around with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Guess who's home again? Everything works. We can take calls. Hey, listen to this. You're going to love this. Yeah, that's a dial tone. Real live working phones for a real live Moran Monday broadcast. And as usual, we are not without potential nominees this Moran Monday on the horn. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. And the horn is available to you in a wide variety of platforms, be it most primarily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com itself, where you merely click the button that says Listen Live and all the magic begins to happen. But if you're on a, say, a smartphone or some other kind of device, you can also go to TuneIn Radio, their app, or Tuner Internet Radio's app, or Stitcher Radio's app. We are just all over the place. The horn are, is, whatever. You can also get the podcast by grabbing the podcast feed address at whiterosesociety.org in the subdomain for this show, Head On with Bob Kincaid, or you can get it at iTunes. So does that cover all the... Yeah, I think it does. It is Monday. It is a short broadcast week, unless I can figure out some way to... some way to broadcast... No, I'm going to be talking in the evenings this week. I get on the road tomorrow. The lovely and talented Agnes has just brought me an ice-cold bottle of water for the program. She's just wonderful, you know that? Anyway, I get on the road tomorrow on a plane in Charleston. Here's how it works out. I fly from Charleston to Atlanta. Yeah, I know I'm going to Wisconsin. Go figure. I fly from Atlanta to Minneapolis and Minneapolis to Duluth. And then I get out of the car, out of the plane and into a car in Duluth and go over into the region of northern Wisconsin where some mountaintop removal thugs want to bring their technique and their technology to the acquisition of taconite iron ore, if you can imagine. Yeah, nice guy that Chris Klein. He's behind a lot of this. He's got himself a yacht that he rents out. Imagine that. You're rich enough to own a yacht, and yet you're rented out. You can find it if you just Google the image. He has a yacht called Mind Games. Oh, he is a witty one. Mind Games. Because, you know, it's just a game when you come into a community and unleash ungodly amounts of toxins and poisons all over the community, and you bring about birth defects and heart disease and lung disease and endocrine disorders, and it's a mind game. Oh, do light me a cigar with another one of those sopping wet $100 bills, and light the sopping wet $100 bill with another $100 bill. That'll show those little activists. We'll crush them. Oh, let's go coelacanth fishing on the mind games. Bastard. Anyway, I'm headed for Wisconsin. I will arrive tomorrow evening and then be speaking. There will be speaking engagements Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and fly back out on Saturday. Ordinarily, I like to take my Sherpa guide, Ferg, along with me, but no, it's just me traveling on this particular trip. I am looking forward to it, though. It's a part of the country I've never seen, a part of the country that's beautiful. I'll be talking at the Bad River Convention Center on Wednesday evening. I can't wait to see it all, even in the depths of not quite the winter that folks are used to up there, from what I understand, but I'm still taking some warm weather clothing. But the broadcast week will be a shortened one. So some program notes. Like I said, I'll get back. I'll fly back on get back on Saturday evening, and then on Sunday we will have a Prism West Virginia American History Chat with Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly, and then get back to a somewhat normal, to the extent beyond which normal is more than a setting on a dryer, normal broadcast schedule. I'll miss you guys this week, and I'll miss our conversation, but this is important, because it's no joke. These coal thugs want to use mountaintop removal techniques in the hills of northern Wisconsin. And it ought to be illegal. It probably is illegal. But mining thugs have never been known to be particularly concerned with, you know, laws and stuff. Oh, and they're making the same promises that they make here. Well, we're going to bring you some jobs. Going to have jobs. We're going to give high school dropouts $60,000 a year jobs driving Dion Caterpillars. Won't it be wonderful? Going to be 700 jobs, $60,000 a year, home of the country, a river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. Of course, they don't talk about the death, the disease, the destruction, the ruination of communities, the degradation of land that will not heal, will not get better, cannot be reclaimed. Nope. Not going to talk about it. Because if they told people what they were actually up to, no one would let them get away with it. What's that weird sound coming over your voice, Bob? Oh, Marty, don't tell me there's any weird sounds coming over my voice. Any weirdness is emanating from me. There aren't any other weird sounds. Darn it. Let me check the chat room. Oh, chat room. Have you ever been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room? You should try it sometime. It's free. It's easy. Okay. Thank you, Waggy. Thank you, Sparky. Okay. The weirdness is on your end, Marty. I mean, I'm not saying, just saying. So hopefully the weather will hold and not be nasty. We won't have to worry about any wing icing or any of that creepy stuff. Hopefully I won't have to fly from Minneapolis to Duluth on one of those twin-engine turboprop bombing run over Tokyo kind of nightmare thingies that run between Charleston, West Virginia, and Washington, D.C., and should have been retired somewhere around the end of the Second World War. Please, no, let it be just a nice, sane, comfortable, well, okay, not comfortable, regional jet. So, yeah, and then I come back Duluth to Minneapolis, Minneapolis to Detroit, Detroit to Charleston. And that's on Saturday. But I hope we have a Jim Dandy evening tonight. Like I said, it is Moran Monday on the horn. Don't wish that on me, Sparky. Got to be a puddle jumper, Bob Kincaid. No, please. Please, no Saabs, no de Havilland Dash 8s, please. Okay, thanks, Randy. Thanks, Jack. No weirdness. They're not getting any weirdness either. Oh, I'm pulling your legs, says Marty. I'm referring to the music. Hey. No, Mrs. Kincaid will not be doing any pinch speaking in my absence. She's busy making sure everything, all the other plates keep spinning in the air. You know, the ones that are thrown into the air by a certain little group of teenagers, if you know what I mean. Right. Oh, says Randy, don't forget Roku. Yes, you can hear the horn on Roku. And I think on the Nokia system as well, whatever Nokia's listing is. I remember when Ben Birch got that for us. A little note in from our buddy Tosh regarding Ferg's story from Friday. Remember Ferg telling the story about going outside into the night and meeting a homeless person there in D.C. who said, he gave the woman what he had in his pocket, namely a quarter. And she said, "You're the first person out of this building who's given me anything." That building being run by a major Protestant religious organization. Well, Tosh heard the story, and he said, "It seems rather weird, but in suburban Montgomery County, our panhandlers have vanished since the election. I may be wrong, and perhaps I haven't been out enough, been working quite a bit, and I'd swear I haven't seen the usual panhandlers on their usual corners in Germantown. It's almost like they were a prop set up to remind us that the economy is so horrible under that one. Last time I served at the Good Drive Men's Mission, October, the staff and a trustee type were talking about how some of those beggars make enough a day to stay at one of the local flea bag hotels. Their facilities are probably pretty full this time of the year, as men who do otherwise sleep outside find it's too cold to stay out there. Some of the guys at the mission work, like serving as vendors at Redskins games, but apparently aren't making enough to have housing, so they pay the cost of staying at the shelter instead. It's a bunk room capable of holding about 300 with two high bunks and limited storage. It's not much, but it's warm." Tosh says, "I reject the idea that I'm enabling bad actions by giving money, which is the rightest argument about this habit. I'm giving money because it's my responsibility to be as generous as possible. Money's tight in our world these days, but I can give what I can give. It is their responsibility to use it appropriately. If that means they grab a bottle of Mad Dog 2020 to get through a cold night, that's their choice. I am compelled to my position. I fully realize that my position is not as firm as I'd like. We don't have tenure, and we as a company are facing an uncertain future, so it's more important to be generous now, since for all I know, it could be me out there next month. So far, that hasn't been the case, but in the aero business, it's always a possibility. And if I could expand on your assertion, Tosh, in America, it is always a possibility." Because as Ferg noted, this is a country that can spend millions upon billions of dollars, if not trillions, to build things that will blow brown people into oblivion. But we somehow haven't quite gotten it figured out how to keep elderly homeless persons from freezing to death in the cold. Of course, that was the thrust of the argument in that article from Der Spiegel that I shared with you a couple of weeks ago. We can murder someone at pinpoint, but if we needed to find them to give them a roof over their heads and a hot meal, well, we don't know where they are. Right? Yeah. Yeah, Jim writing. You mean puddle jumpers, Bob? Yeah, I've been on too many. Well, no, actually, Jim, you're still alive to write about the experience. That means you have not been on too many. You've been on just the right number. 5x5, says Ron and Raleigh. Good, thank you. And this being Moran Monday on the horn. Oh, by the way, right quick, out of the blocks. You know, of course, that the horn is listener-supported. The widget for this month has not kicked in yet because we do have at least $20 on the board. We did make our November fundraising goal, and that was a blessing. Thank you very kindly. Now we find ourselves in December and trying to sort out the challenges this month will bring so that there can be a January on the horn. And we're trying to raise $150 tonight. Although, in point of fact, I had a communication from Shirley in Wisconsin, who last month put up a challenge, and this month wants to begin it the same way. Shirley uses the United States Postal Service, but I was informed that it has left with the Postal Service, and Shirley would like to see her contribution of $100 matched this evening in any denomination and any combination to get us, because we're going to be in a deep hole by the time I get back, because there will be no show Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, so that means it's probably at least a $600 hole toward getting December taken care of. So Shirley is in for $100. And would like very much to see that matched. 5 at 20, 10 at 10, 20 at 5, 2 at 50, 1 at 50, 5 at 10. However you care to work out the contributions and the combinations, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So is the snail mail address under the tab Contribute. Thank you very kindly. It will be most meaningful. Well, we pay bills as they come in. We've got this hat. We put all bills in a hat. And we draw a bill out to pay it as we have the ability so to do. Thank you very kindly to Jay for just now matching 25% of Shirley's contribution. That helps immensely. That means there's $75 to go in the course of this 1 hour and 40 minutes or so. Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Randy. Yes, we did beat the Swede for the month of November. And our ongoing thanks to our buddy Scott in Sweden. He crossed the pond. He had a loss in the family and crossed the pond recently, and I presume that he is back home in Sweden now. But he created the Beat the Swede Challenge for the remainder of 2012 back several months ago so that we could maybe make up a little of some months' shortfalls. Thank you, Scott. Thank you very, very much. He did travel over here to deal with a loss in the family, but by the same token, whatever reason you come to this this country, if you've been away from it for a while, you can't help but noticing what a strange and scary place it is. And so I will be interested in seeing and reading and sharing with you Scott's thoughts upon his visit and return home to a sane country. You know, that socialist Sweden, where, oddly enough, with weather considerably colder than what most of us have here, they managed not to have people dying of exposure in the winter because they're homeless. Go figure. I know, but I look forward to hearing from Scott regarding his observations of this country when he arrives back. Thanks, Henry. Thank you very kindly. That puts us at $65 now to finish off Shirley's challenge for the evening. We are much obliged. Now, more on Monday. Ron and Raleigh noted that, well, I'll just share it with you. Hold on. Let me pull it up here. Ron and Raleigh noted, he said, since it appears that my nomination of Tom Hartman caused, if not a firestorm, then a small grass fire of controversy. And the thing is, it wasn't so much a controversy, it was as if Ron opened the door and made it okay to talk about something that's been bugging the hell out of a lot of people. This atheism is a religion thingy that has lately been promoted by Mr. Hartman. Ron says, since it appears my nomination of Tom Hartman caused, if not a firestorm, then a small grass fire of controversy, I'd like to give two more nominations this week. Well, go ahead. Go ahead, Ron. Go ahead. I just finished listening to Mark Green's show. You're just trying to get me in trouble, aren't you, Ron? I mean, I'm just, you know, this little pissant with a microphone out here. I'm a relative nobody. And sure, why not? Let's go bite the ankles of the great and mighty. He says, I just got done listening to Mark Green's show. His guests this week were Mary Madeline and Ron Reagan. First, I'd like to nominate Mark Green. This guy is the white Juan Williams. He wonders why he's never been able to win political office. Perhaps if he were to grow a spine, he'd have a better chance. He's one of those third-way demo-publicans. The second nominee is Mary Madeline. She's got to be one of the most arrogant, self-aggrandizing, know-it-all, so-called pundits I've ever had the displeasure of listening to. What Charlie Pierce would refer to as a gobshite. She had the unmitigated gall to state that Rachel Maddow didn't know diddly about politics. She went on to denigrate Ms. Maddow's status as a Rhodes Scholar. You know, that's a real mark of class when you're lowering the boom on somebody who isn't there to defend themselves, which is, I guess, kind of what we're doing with it. But, you know, this is different, right? She went on to denigrate Ms. Maddow's status as a Rhodes Scholar. Every statement she made intimated that there are no Democrats with an ounce of intelligence, while blocking downfield for that closeted freak from South Carolina and Grandpa McCain. Blocking downfield. Nice work into the football reference there, Ron. She also gave Condoleezza Rice a pass on her lies about September 11th while castigating Susan Rice about Benghazi. She and the old snakehead must have awesome sex because, oh please, I didn't need that image. Margaret Thatcher naked in a snowstorm. Margaret Thatcher naked in a snowstorm. Right. Just trying to clear out the image. She and the old snakehead must have some awesome sex because I can't imagine how any clear-thinking person could stand to be around her if they weren't being paid large sums of money. Then, says Ron, time to get ready for my third 12-hour shift this weekend. Ain't life in the air age grand? Grand indeed. Ron had also sent something along that I thought you would find interesting. He said, I'm sending you a job link. Ron's out there and trying to find meaningful employment in the workforce. I'm sending you a job link that I viewed today. Look at the requirements and the screening process, and then look at the pay. This is what we face in today's job market. Thousands in college debt to face this kind of pay and scrutiny. Next, they'll demand the right of first night. You know, le droit de seigneur. Let's see. Position. Production warehouse worker. Of course, it goes without saying this is a non-union position. Just listen to this. Years of experience, 1 to 2 years. Full-time employee position in the computer IT services industrial sector located in North Carolina. Education level, bachelor's degree. They want, so before I read this all to you, understand they want a bachelor's degree. Newport Computer Services, an asset recovery service provider and computer spare parts reseller located in Morrisville, North Carolina, is seeking a qualified warehouse worker. This person will be part of the asset recovery team and be cross-trained. Does that mean there are different shoes involved? And will be cross-trained in all, or does that mean you just carry one up the hill every day with a crown of thorns, economic crown of thorns on your head? This person will be part of the asset recovery team and be cross-trained in all activities at the facility, including warehouse and testing duties, i.e. the receipt and unloading of equipment, auditing and cataloging, testing, troubleshooting, and drive sanitization, and preparing materials for outgoing shipment. This person, Capricorn 3221, Carousel awaits. This person needs to be energetic and excited to be part of a team environment, but should be able to work independently as well. Needs to be able to think on their feet. A person on their feet. Yeah, I understand now why they need somebody with a bachelor's degree, preferably one in English. Needs to be able to think on their feet and respond, as opposed to thinking on other people's feet. Needs to be able to think on their feet and respond well to deadlines. Previous working experience, either through education or work environment, is a definite asset. Job requirements. Must be able to work independently and demonstrate excellent problem-solving and analytical capability. Will you pardon me for a moment if I say that this sounds like one of those jobs way, way, way back when America had a middle class that probably somebody with requirements like this, you probably could have supported a family on a single paycheck. Silly, silly, almost 50-year-old. Those jobs don't exist anymore. Oh, hell no. Must enjoy working in a fast-paced environment, utilizing excellent time and project management skills. Excellent communication skills, written and verbal, are very important. Because the people writing our job notices don't have those skills. I'm reminded of what Mark Twain said about the word very. He said, every time you want to use the word very, replace it with the word damned, and then your editor will cut it out, and then you'll have a nice piece of writing. Excellent communication skills, written and verbal, are damned important. See how it works? The successful applicant must undergo a complete background check, 7-year employment history check, multiple personnel screening tests and drug testing, as well as body cavity searches. Okay, I add the body cavity searches part. Seems like there ought to be some fun in there somewhere. A 6-month probationary period is used to evaluate work ethics, accuracy, and dependency. The facility is open from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Education requirements, bachelor's degree preferred. Salary, $10 to $12 an hour based upon qualifications and experience. And you'll be glad to have it, Prol. Benefits. After a 3-month probationary period, employer pays 100% of individual's health, dental, STD, LTD, and life insurance. Paid vacation and holidays begin accruing after a 6-month probationary period. To apply, email only. So you went through college. You got yourself a computer science degree or a biology degree or a comparative history degree or a French degree or an English degree. And you're, or an engineering degree. Let's not be pretty about this. and Newport Computer Services, Inc. thinks you're worth $10 to $12 an hour. $12 if you've got that extra experience. You know, the bachelor's degree. And you've maybe worked a little bit somewhere, somehow. But it comes with health care. So I'm willing to bet there have been hundreds of applications for this job. Because it's a full-time job and you actually get to be an employee as opposed to a temp. You actually get health insurance after the 3-month probationary period. You actually get long-term disability and short-term disability coverage. You get life insurance. For the rest of your life, you'll get 2 weeks of paid vacation a year when the civilized world gets 6. And they'll call that productivity. Jesus. Brutal country. Marty says, I hope it's a low-cost area. That's $24,960 pre-tax dollars. Yeah, don't spend it all in one place. Wow. We are halfway toward meeting Shirley's challenge this evening. Thank you very much, Sal. Jim says that sounds to him like basically a materials handler job description. And it requires a bachelor's degree now. Then again, this being more in Monday and everything, I guess you could say, it could be worse. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean this. Assuming I can find it. Yeah, here he is. Come on, load you. There we are. Federal judges are very well-paid individuals. They get, well, it's a gravy job. It's a job you get for life as long as you don't get caught with a dead girl or a live boy. True, Marty, true. Eventually, Wally World Greeter will require a PhD in psychology. Now, if you're a federal judge, you've got a lifetime appointment, you've got benefits, you've got retirement, you've got health care, you've got enough money to make a halfway decent mortgage payment, you can probably afford to drive something off of which the wheels are not falling. And as an added bonus to help you get your federal judging done, you get 2 clerks. And those 2 clerks are governmental employees. And they do all the actual brain work for you. And they generally, your clerks generally come from the top of law school graduating classes. For instance, if you graduate number 1 in your class from, say, Yale Law School or Harvard or Stanford, odds are you've got a halfway decent chance of getting a clerking position, say, with a Supreme Court justice. Although, I have to say, can you imagine what it would be like to be Slappy Thomas's clerk? Or Fat Tony Scalia's? Or Sammy Alito's? Ugh. It's a workers' comp claim just waiting to happen. But even way down the line at the trial court level, a federal district judge it ain't a bad life. And it's super competitive. And every federal judge gets a pair of clerks. Now, what happens if you, federal judge thumbfingers, think that you're special and you want a third clerk? Well, that's where we find ourselves with the story of the Honorable William Martinez, a federal job, a federal judge, job indeed, a federal judge in Denver, Colorado. He's advertising online for a free clerk. No, really. He has to pay the two he has, and he does not have budget money to pay a third one. Of course, maybe he could pay it out of his own pocket, but, well, we wouldn't want to do that. He is advertising for a clerk's job in which he demands excellent academic credentials and two or more years of legal practice experience, and he offers a salary of zero. It's a two-year clerkship. The description that goes with the job ad says, this position is a gratuitous service appointment. It also says that the successful applicant will affirmatively waive any claim to salary, to benefits, to any form of compensation whatsoever, and requires the successful applicant to also acknowledge that he or she can be fired at any time for any reason. I'm sorry, it's a year long, not 2 years. But here's the fun part. While acknowledging that the judge can bounce you on your ass from the job for which he is not paying you for any reason at any time, that sword doesn't cut in both directions. He asks the applicant, quote, to morally commit to the position for 1 year. And then advises there is no possibility of the position turning into a paid position with Judge Martinez. Now, what do we know based on the facts as presented? We know that no brilliant young litigator-to-be, future justice of the court, got Atticus Finch in the making, who has so much as a dime's worth of student debt, can take this job. And yet there are and will be oodles of applicants. This is a job that can only be taken by a graduating law student who is, in fact, a son or daughter of the 1%. Whose mommy and daddy can put them up in an apartment in Denver, can pay for their groceries and their gasoline. It is an apprenticeship in the most 16th century version of the word. It is something approaching bond servitude, because you know that old phrase, a man's word is his bond. Well, you, applicant, give your bond that you will stay with this, I presume, anybody want to do the research, right-wing freak of a judge. While the judge beneficently gives you the benefit of his wisdom. By the way, this is all probably illegal. This probably violates the Fair Labor Standards Act. This probably should get Judge Martinez removed from the bench, but it won't. By the way, Judge Martinez wants his applicants to have high ethical standards and be committed to the rule of law. This is an article over at Alternet by Paul Campos from Salon. It's been around for a little bit, but you can probably still find it. And Paul Campos uses the last paragraph of his article to note the punchline, which brings me, he says, to the mordant punchline. Before becoming a federal judge, William Martinez was a lawyer for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Wasn't Slappy Thomas with the EEOC as well? I thought so. But this is America. This is how it plays out. Here in what Sandra so long ago referred to and coined as the new normal. Yeah. And by the way, since I won't be here for Wednesday, and since we're in the courthouse, as it were, let's take a trip to Concord, New Hampshire. I'm sorry, Manchester, New Hampshire. You know, the right wing has been very generous in founding, and the religion industry, well, they're kind of interchangeable, aren't they? Has been very generous in founding these think tanks that defend poor, persecuted Christians for standing up for the ideals of their faith. Right? One of those faith-based legal think tanks is the Alliance Defending Freedom. If you look at their website, don't. I already did it for you. You'll find that the Alliance Defending Freedom is dedicated to making sure that it keeps the door open for the spread of the gospel through their defense of religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage, and family. Sometimes that entails defending a non-profit tax-exempt church in a squabble with the IRS. Yeah. Sometimes the Alliance Defending Freedom lawyer who's in that said squabble will describe on her Facebook page that her favorite book is the Bible. Sometimes that lawyer's name is Lisa Byron. Sometimes that lawyer named Lisa Byron in Manchester, New Hampshire, gets taken down by the FBI on kiddie porn charges. Sometimes they go into the lawyer Lisa Byron's space there, where the little waiting room in next to the courthouse, and they bring her out in handcuffs on kiddie porn charges. Sometimes Alliance Defending Freedom lawyers named Lisa Byron are charged with actually transporting a 14-year-old female over the international border between the United States and Canada in order to video said underage female 14-year-old having sex with another underage individual. I haven't quite yet figured out how it is that that works out to defending freedom. Let's see, federal charges, transportation with intent to engage in criminal sexual activity, possession of child pornography, and 5 counts of sexual exploitation of children. 5, not 1. She had been notified of the charges against her, and several stipulations had been made to her being able to remain at large and continue practicing law during the pendency of the proceedings. She was commanded by the court to use her computer only for work, not to possess weapons, and to have no contact with the teenage girl in the 5 videos and 2 pictures found on her computer. Well, she did manage, Lisa Byron of the Alliance Defending Freedom, she did manage not to have contact with the young girl. On the other hand, since she had been released on bond, she posted an ad on Craigslist. That's the same place where she met the individual that she ultimately tipped off the Manchester police about porn on her computer. She also didn't quite manage to live up, as a Christian, of course, to that command that she have no firearms, because she said there was a pistol under her mattress when the FBI agents got ready to search. Well, the FBI agents didn't find the pistol under the mattress, but they did find 200 rounds of ammunition. The judge said to her, "There is evidence that you at least thought you had a loaded gun under your mattress. I find that extremely troubling, considering you're a lawyer." Let's see. Again, this lawyer for Alliance Defending Freedom. Two witnesses testified to seeing her in possession of ecstasy, marijuana, and cocaine. She sent a threatening text message to the person who turned her into the police, advising him he would have to watch his back forever. She sent a text to a friend saying she might flee to Cuba because she had nothing left. You think Cuba would take her? Because I don't. She asked people to lie to law enforcement officers about her case. And apparently there are other juveniles who have been involved with her in sexual activity and drug use. You know, there's an old saying out there among the lawyers that when you have the facts on your side, you pound the facts. And when you've got the law on your side, you pound the law. And when neither are on your side, you pound on the table. And that is where Jim Moir, her lawyer, found himself. He said, "But judge, consider the fact that she has no criminal history. She's lived in New Hampshire for more than 40 years. She's come to all of her court appearances. She's had plenty of time to flee already, and she hasn't." Oy. What a winner. What a fine, upstanding Christian. She's been a lawyer in New Hampshire and Massachusetts since 2008. I'm guessing she won't be getting that unpaid clerkship with Judge Martinez. Can't meet that morality requirement. Patty writing in with regard, well, subject line just says, "Mark Green." She says, "Mark Green was such a waste of air at Air America, and he was a destructive force there, to say the least. I'm sure he hates anyone and everything that made it after Air America, since he has plenty of bucks and nothing to back it up. He worked for Nader, and that's how I believe he got his lefty bona fides, but that was a lie. He's a corporocrat and a sad, sad little man. His Air America show, named by him, though he would never have any show if he did not buy or was not purchased for him by his brother Steve, The show he does now in New York City is guest hosted by Queen Mary Madeline. Oh, she was not his guest. What a low-rent bunch of filth there. Okay, sorry, says Patty. Toss the rant, if you please. Had to run in and exercise my demons by keystroke. Back to the cows and the fur babies. Love and hugs to all. I'm not going to throw away something like that, Patty. I understand completely. Jack writes in from Shreveport. Says, I hate what our current job description tells us. We're assumed to be criminals. We're assumed to be drug abusers. We're assumed to be liars. We're assumed to be scum if we have a nick on our credit rating. On and on and on. But a Supreme Court justice is never required to answer a question. Well, yeah. They're better than us. Ron and Raleigh under the subject line, Your Honor, I object. That whole story brings new meaning to the phrase right to work for less state. A new model for employment in the modern age. By the way, equal employment doesn't mean you'll get paid. Thanks for the reminder. Meanwhile, our lawyer, Ms. Byron, Clayton, the militant sociologist, says, this lady's just a creative thinker. Yeah, see, Clayton, it went past her creative thinking, and that's when she got kind of creative and nasty with the video camera in Canada. Waggy asking, what kind of law does she practice? Well, she practiced, I guess, administrative law when she was defending the 13th Pentecostal Church and Herpetological Sanctuary against the IRS. But one presumes she probably has some sort of criminal practice if she's hanging around in a courtroom, in a courthouse. Yeah, we got a funny bunch in the chat room this evening. Lottie, our chat room moderator. Is that a loaded gun under your mattress, or are you just happy to see me? Wow. Yeah. Jim's a little put off by the story of the judge in Denver wanting some free indentured servitude. That's in fact, no Title V. Are they required to be an indentured servant? Violates FSKA in accordance with federal class and comp. You would think. There's probably some loopholes for judicial clerks, though, but not paying them isn't one of them. Judge Martinez is just special. Or maybe Judge Martinez already had somebody in mind and he just put the ad online to complete the formalities. Maybe he's got a kid coming out of law school still at home. Who knows? Maybe the kid didn't do so good in law school, couldn't get a clerkship somewhere else. So, but then again, we're just speculating, aren't we? Sometimes we do that. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And I know a lot of you don't watch football. But sometimes the sport transcends the playing field. And such was the case on Saturday, when word reached the media of a horror that had been perpetrated in the Kansas City area, where a young player named Jovan Belcher, who had literally worked and scraped his way up through the ranks to a starting position with the Kansas City Chiefs, blew away his girlfriend at their home and then went to the Chiefs training facility and blew himself away. Orphaning in two trigger pulls. A 3-month-old baby. Now remember, this is America, where if you dare bring up the issue of firearms and their deadly, deadly contribution to our culture, you will immediately be set upon by the right-wingers of the National Republican and Rifle Association, or even worse, Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America. Goom. Gun Owners of America. Goom. Now, there's backstory to this. We are paying more attention now when football players have horrible outcomes in their lives because we've learned a little bit more about what head injuries do to the ability of a human being, repeated head injuries, do to the ability of a human being to go on being a rational primate. We are primates, you know. And there is some reason to believe that that such had happened to Jovan Belcher. Because to stand in front of your general manager and your head coach, point a gun at your head and pull the trigger, is not the act of a rational human being. How strange it is, then, and you might recall the statement I read from Mark Kelly, the husband of Gabrielle Giffords, a couple of weeks ago, at the sentencing of Jared Lee Loeffner, who took a big portion of Gabby Giffords' mind from her, as well as the lives from several others in the shooting spree he went on in a Tucson shopping center parking lot. In which he called out feckless politicians who dare not say a word about our blood-sodden gun culture. And from time to time, I'm pretty hard on sportscasters generally because a lot of them are vacuous horses' rear ends. I still remain convinced that most color commentary color commentary guys on radio and TV could be replaced by a barking chihuahua and none of us be the worse for it. He's a fine young man, Keith. Yes, he is, and he runs about a 4.540. Well, thank you. But lo and behold, even in the quietest moments, things happen. Well, what the audio I'm about to play for you is from Bob Costas during last night's Sunday night NFL game on NBC. And he's catching hell for it. Fox and Friends went after Bob Costas this morning. Brian Kilmeade, super genius, said, "I just don't know if it's appropriate enough on a Sunday night less than 24 hours after this guy took his own life and killed his girlfriend and the mother of his baby to make that stance. I don't think we needed to hear that last night." Well, if you're a babbling idiot over at Radio Rwanda, Fox News, we never need to hear that. America just needs to toddle along. Nothing to see here. These are not the handgun violence victims you were looking for. And who's on the bubble in the hunt for the wild, the last wild card slot? So this is Bob Costas last night on NBC, who is able to say something that all the nightly news people seem unable to say. That's why I suggest that it may be worth your time to pay attention to a little bit of sports now and then, because every now and then something gets said that you can't hear in what passes for the news division.
Well, you knew it was coming. In the aftermath of the nearly unfathomable events in Kansas City, that most mindless of sports cliches was heard yet again. Something like this really puts it all in perspective. Well, if so, that sort of perspective has a very short shelf life.
Am I the only one who is struck by the irony of having someone singing God Bless America in the background of these remarks? Yeah, just say it.
Since we will inevitably hear about the perspective we have supposedly again regained the next time ugly reality intrudes upon our games. Please, those who need tragedies to continually recalibrate their sense of proportion about sports would seem to have little hope of ever truly achieving perspective. You want some actual perspective on this? Well, a bit of it comes from the Kansas City-based writer Jason Whitlock, with whom I do not always agree, but who today said it so well that we may as well just quote or paraphrase from the end of his article. Our current gun culture, Whitlock wrote, ensures that more and more domestic disputes will end in the ultimate tragedy, and that more convenience store confrontations over loud music coming from a car will leave more teenage boys bloodied and dead. Handguns do not enhance our safety. They exacerbate our flaws, tempt us to escalate arguments, and bait us into embracing confrontation rather than avoiding it. In the coming days, Javon Belcher's actions and their possible connection to football will be analyzed. Who knows? But here, wrote Jason Whitlock, is what I believe. If Javon Belcher didn't possess a gun, he and Cassandra Perkins would both be alive today. The second half is next from Dallas.
Kind of hard to argue with, isn't it? Well, it is. No, it's not hard to argue with, Bob. He could have done that with a baseball bat, and then he could have driven to the... He could have beat her, bludgeoned her to death with a baseball bat, and then he could have drove over to the training facility and stood there in front of his general manager and his head coach and beat himself to death with a baseball bat. He could have done that. He could have strangled her with his own bare professional football playing hands. And then he could have gone over to the training facility and he could have strangled himself in front of his coach and his general manager. He could have done that. This ain't about guns. This is about somebody who's crazy. Because only a crazy person does something like that. No. Only a person with a firearm readily at hand does something like that. And there's that idiot from Fox News Radio Rwanda. I just don't know if we needed to hear something like that. But Bob Costas is right. Just as soon as everybody gets their perspective back, we'll have another perspective-altering incident in which we say, well, we really don't have perspective on this right now. It's too raw. It's too fresh. When is it not going to be raw and fresh for the three-month-old who will grow up with no memory whatsoever of her mama and her daddy? When's that not going to be too raw and too fresh? You see, ultimately, the gun gooms, gun owners of America, the gooms don't want to have this conversation because they know, being generally right-wing, that they can't win an argument that's on a level playing field. They know that they have to have the debate pre-tilted for their convenience, wherein we talk about, well, what we got to do here is we got to balance Merck and freedom with whether or not we can tolerate every now and then a three-month-old getting turned into an orphan by a crazy person. There are deeper discussions to be had out of this story. Things like head injuries. Things like what we expect young men to do to their bodies, even for supposedly large amounts of money that really don't turn into large amounts of money when you consider the length of time that they have in which to make that money. The mortality numbers for an offensive lineman, who oddly enough test out as being the most intelligent of all the NFL football players, offensive linemen, is about what, 56, 57, 58 years old? And then goodbye. Check out. Worm food. That is a conversation for another day. But sooner or later, we really do have to have this conversation about firearms. Whether it's an NFL player or whether the victim is a young man who was alleged to have been listening to music too loudly. Because why? Because the failure to have that conversation is lethal. Clayton asking, any possibility that steroids might fit into this little story? I feel for the child. Maybe, but he had Mr. Belcher had head injuries as a result of his playing of the game. And I some information is slowly leaking out that I guess he and the woman in question were not getting along. But even not getting along doesn't stand as condition precedent for gunplay. And it ain't play, it's for keeps. We have a choice. We can have this discussion, or we can go on having more horrified stories about young men blowing away young women and orphaning three-month-old babies. You know, it's kind of gross and sick. I know which side we're going to choose. Because of the Larry Pratts and the Wayne LaPierres of the world. Piedra in the chat room just sent me a note, says, got a problem? Point a gun at it. That's become the American way. And that is the truth. Well, the phone lines are open. 304-658-3333 is the number. One of these days, if we actually get far enough ahead, we'll pay off the hostage vig on our toll-free number, but can't do that just yet. We are about $35 away from making tonight's challenge from Shirley in Wisconsin. I'm not going to stop and take a break because I'm not going to get to do this for several days. So light up the phones, 304-658-3333, and we will go there with immediately. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
Oh, fair to middle, partly cloudy.
Well, especially in this weather. Rather spring-like, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got the air on now.
God. It's only December the 3rd. You know, we generally don't turn the heat on here until, you know, June.
Really? You know, going back to Bob Costas and what he said, you know, it was quite true. And quoting that guy from Kansas City or wherever he quoted from, there it is.
Yeah.
And I just wonder about these football players and stuff like this and the traumatic brain injury they get from bumping heads the way they do. I mean, Bob, that's one reason I just can't get all wet down there about football.
I understand that. If you know the history of the game, you know that back at the beginning of the 20th century, Theodore Roosevelt intervened to the point of almost criminalizing the game. This is before the game went pro. This is when it was just the scions of upper class families getting together for a tilt on the gridiron in their little striped jerseys with their little leather hats. Or no, that was before they even had the leather hats. And that was one of the I think that may have been one of the conditions that, you know, we'd have some sort of head protection, because back then young men were actually dropping dead on the football field.
Exactly. And these helmets and stuff like that they're provided, how much protection do they assure?
It provides considerable protection in light of what happens, or in light of the impacts, but the other thing is, they then become weapons in and of themselves. So the leagues, be it college or pro, try to take steps to minimize the usage of a helmet as a weapon. But for instance, yesterday in the game between the Seahawks and the Bears, a young man caught a pass at the front of the end zone and was knocked practically senseless. And then we had 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of analysis in the booth as to whether or not he had possession of the football as he crossed the goal line before he was knocked senseless and let go of the ball.
Now, what justification can you or anyone else offer for something like that, for a guy playing a sport being knocked senseless? Are we going back to the days of the gladiator contest of Rome?
Well, I don't know that we're going back to it, Jim. I think to one extent or another, we've never left it. You might recall, for instance, from your medieval history, that the crowned heads of the European states eventually had to outlaw jousting tournaments because all of their best warriors, a completely equipped knight was the functional equivalent. Of a tank. But they were killing themselves in jousting tournaments. All for the effort of getting some young, lovely young lady to throw a diaphanous piece of silk hanky at them.
Well, it was more than that. I mean, it was more than that within their social structure, and it was barbaric. I mean, who was the guy that Nostradamus predicted? Remember him, Henry II?
Yeah.
Well, boy, he sure caught one in the right or left eye, didn't he?
Well, yeah, of France, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you come forward in history, and lo and behold, you've got I think about him every time that I walk past. You know, right there on the corner of, right there across from Lafayette Park, just a block back from Pennsylvania Avenue, is the Stephen Decatur House. And Stephen Decatur died in a duel over the honor of an offended Commodore.
I remember that.
Then, of course, there's Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr.
Same thing. But these weren't games. These were the code of the duello then.
Right, but with an understanding that
their differences.
Yeah, that they would try to, you know, every effort was made to avoid bloodshed, blah, 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 just like every effort is made in football to avoid injury. But it doesn't always work out that way.
I don't know if that's true, Bob. I just don't...
Which part?
That every effort is made to avoid injury in football. I don't believe it's true.
I think the Players Association would tell you that it is not true.
Well, of course they would.
But you know what? Whether the that's the thing. The management needs to keep the game nice and brutal because that's what the pros in. That's what puts the pros in the seats, either in the stadium or in the living room.
Well, see, I just can't understand that, and I can't understand the mentality of watching it. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, anybody who's it's not just football, Jim. Anybody. I was horrified as a child. Every blessed Sunday, you know, ABC is there with the opening of Wide World of Sports, and you see that poor bastard go off the ski jump, and it must have been broken into a million pieces. And every Sunday they, you know, showed that as the agony of defeat, and then there'd be some Indy car coming all to pieces and catching fire.
Well, I'm not going to equate the ski jump with football. But I will equate the stock car races because they are absolute blood sports.
But yet, in terms of NASCAR and IndyCar racing now, you got a better chance of surviving a wreck in that than you do of coming away from a series of head injuries in the NFL. You know, after Dale Earnhardt Sr. died. They actually started getting serious about head and neck protection in NASCAR, and of course Dale Earnhardt Sr., if I recall my NASCAR correctly, didn't want to wear none of that sissy stuff because it made him feel unmanly.
Oh boy, he did, huh?
Maybe I'm wrong, but if I am, lucky for
me,
someone will correct me.
Funeral homes around here, they had special places where people could go and remember him. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Oh no. I remember when he died. A neighbor showed up wanting Agnes to give her a ride across the river because she wanted to buy some black crepe paper. She was going to drape her car and her house in black in memory of the Intimidator.
For what?
As a means of honoring.
I simply don't understand this type of mentality. I simply and never will. Never will. Absolutely not. And I've seen enough carnage in my life to realize that, well, you don't need to add to it. But going back to this federal judge, now that's a real poser.
Yeah.
Now, I think the judiciary has certain rules that will allow them to do that. I'm not sure. I don't know if they come under Office of Personnel Management rules or not. But they can be sort of a law unto themselves. They don't have to go through the administrative process of Office of Personnel Management and going through the same thing that the administrative law judges do. But I guess what he's advertising for is basically an indentured servant. What are they going to do? Tear a piece of paper in two and at the end of his...
right, I don't know.
Put it back together?
I think it certainly seems kind of brutal by 21st... there's the practical question of how you would accomplish this.
I don't know. I don't know the legal mechanism of Title V that would, provide that type of appointment. That's our problem with it.
But what it points to, Jim, the abuse of the so-called internship position is something that is rife in this country. And sadly, folks on our side abuse it as much as anyone else. we'll let you work for free, and we won't pay you, and we'll call it experience.
I don't know, Bob. That's the abuse of the Fair Labor Standards Act, and it's also abuse of Title V and anybody else in the federal employ. I mean, you can't ask people to work for nothing. And if you can, boy, I'll tell you, federal class and comp and personnel practices since my day has certainly changed a hell of a lot.
Well, it probably has. I mean, look, that warehouse job that Ron wrote to us about, they want a bachelor's degree for that.
But, Bob, that's the lowest thing in the world as far as the job's concerned, because that's called a material handler.
But now it takes a bachelor's degree.
Well, that's probably because of computer skills and tracking mechanisms of merchandise. And
or perhaps, Jim, it's because that's what the market will bear now.
Well, precisely. And, you know, in North Carolina is a non-union state, so they can do what the hell they want to. The worker has no protection, no guarantee, nothing. And I was talking to a good friend of mine from California, and even in California, the rules have changed, because she's just retired from the Golden Gate Bridge Commission, and she told me that the new applicants coming in weren't offered a third of the entitlements that she was when she was employed in 1985. So it's not only in North Carolina, it's even in California, where they have a number of unions to protect workers.
Well, ultimately what we're seeing, and I think I've remarked on this in the past, is and this is deliberate, Jim. This is not some accident. This is the deliberate manifestation of the fondest, wildest, sickest, most psychopathic dreams of Milton Friedman. Because his whole goal was to depress and terrify the workforce to drive wages down. And eventually, that will be the fruits of globalism. Eventually, we'll get those jobs back from Bangladesh, where people die in, you know, sewing factory fires. And they'll come back here for similar wages, and people will die in sewing factory fires here.
Oh, yeah. They're going to relax all the standards. They're going to try to emasculate any federal agency that would protect workers and things of that nature. I can see that coming.
By the way, Marty, who is in California, agrees with you. He says the University of California system is implementing the two-tier benefit program for all new hires starting 1/1/2013.
That's it. Exactly, that's it. I mean, you know,
where are we going and why are we in this handbasket?
Well, straight to a worker's hell. That's exactly where we're going. It's just beyond my pale of expression at this point. It really is. And it's a very sad situation. Absolutely. And on that note, I'm going to let you go and have another caller, but please express my indignation about the things you've been discussing as far as the safety in sports, and also the denigration of the worker in the workplace.
Indeed. Jack in Shreveport just noted two-tiered is another way to say divide and conquer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have definite people in management that are designed to deal with unions and union contracts out there at the Golden Gate Bridge Commission and other unions in California.
Well, and for instance, you're aware, Jim, are you not, of the strike, the Walmart strike over Black Friday? I'm sure you must have seen some stuff about that.
Yeah.
I saw out in the wilds of Facebook, I saw a complaint, a photograph of some military person in Afghanistan. And what it said underneath it was, "And you think you've got it bad because you have to work Black Friday at Walmart." You know, that anti-worker stuff is out there. and there is it is constantly spewed. You know, no one was equating those two things, Jim.
Well, no one needs to compare that because, number one, the guy in Afghanistan is there because he initially volunteered to be in the military service and knew that he could be deployed within 24 hours' notice to any place in the world and must be a deployable asset. I mean, that's the conditions of your contract, your 4-1 of whatever you want to call it now. I'm not sure what they call it now. It's put in the Soldier 201 file. But, I mean, that's the thing. And there's no, you know, that's a voluntary thing. Well, I guess having to work at Walmart because you don't have anything else in.
And then I saw another one, Jim, that said, oh, it's so bad for you. You have to work at Walmart. Well, the people making your crap are burning to death in fires in Bangladesh. Again, it's not the same thing. But you will always see this whenever working people begin to get the inclination to stand on their own hind legs, that there are people out there to say, yes, but.
Yeah, you're getting uppity.
It's what is referred to in some circles as being a concern troll.
Yeah, and referencing Brian Kilmeade and the other two Stygian witches that are on his show.
Nice.
I don't wonder which one anymore that's using the brain, because I don't think they have one the way the Stygian witches have the eye, you know?
Yeah.
He's just an asshole and an idiot.
Well, just the... It's the same thing as my theory of color commentary in radio football. You could replace it with a yapping chihuahua, and I mean, if it was just three yapping chihuahuas on a couch on Fox, the Fox viewers would keep watching and swear that it was Obama's fault.
But these people, like for example in South Carolina, my friend from San Francisco was just home with her mother, okay, in Columbia. And I said, Davey, what channel does she watch? Fox. 24/7. The family, Fox, 24/7. And she expressed to me that she couldn't even have any type of discussion with her own family about this and the people in South Carolina. I'll tell you that. Particular radio station or TV station or whatever you want to call it, and some of these other pundits like Rush Limbaugh and whomever have become so poisonous and so vitriolic that really they are responsible, in my opinion, for the huge division in this country and its ability to get along with each other and to have any type of compromise about anything.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. You remember because you listened to that radio station. You remember Michael Savage, right?
Not very well. But
you know, the one that talks like this.
Oh no, I couldn't take him. I always would cut him off because that.
Well, he's a lunatic.
Of course he is. He's absolutely nuts.
But here's how bad, you know, and I bring this up because you mentioned the toxicity of the Limbaughs and the Fox News and such. He went on a program on WABC New York to mark his return to the air, I guess, tonight. And he said, with regard to the impact that it's having on his business,
many people on the conservative side of the dial are making the same mistakes now that the liberals made when Bush was in power. Air America went bankrupt. Why? Because all they did was bush bashing, and they were just crazy into bush bashing. Boring, boring. How much more could you listen to? It wasn't even clever bush bashing. This is what's going on now with the conservatives. They're committing suicide. Just attacking Obama, although he deserves it, is not good radio. Remember one thing. Radio is primarily an entertainment medium. It was not created to be the voice of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party.
Which is interesting coming from him, because that man can't open his mouth without screaming what a communist, socialist, fascist, Kenyan, Muslim, deep-seated hater of white people, anti-colonialist, that one is.
Oh yeah, they are.
But they are recognizing that these guys really did have a golden goose, and Limbaugh has killed it. And the thing is, it's killing it on both sides of the spectrum. Advertisers are staying away in droves. Everybody, I guess, except the people who want to sell vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off Swedish mattresses that are owned by people taking herbal erection and hair regrowth remedies. Jesus.
Mm.
But you're right. The right wing's job is to divide this country and keep it divided.
It's divide and conquer. That's it.
I mean, consider. Exactly. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. Good hearing from you, and I'll be back a week from tonight, I hope.
Have a good trip, Bob.
Going to try, Jim. Take care.
Out here.
Bye now. Our good buddy Jim and Sandra is with us. Are you there, Sandra?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I got you.
Oh, okay. So I was, of course, it's a bit sardonic and evil on my part, but I was just kind of laughing because you heard about that story of that policeman who gave the brand new boots to homeboy in New York?
No.
Well, it's just some, everyone, oh, it was so wonderful. The police gave him a pair of $100 boots because he was barefoot. He's been walking around barefoot. And it went viral because it's, such a good deed, blah, blah, blah.
Right, well, warm, fuzzy. Warm, fuzzy, yeah.
Yeah, well, the dudes turned up barefoot again, okay?
He sold the spotted. Sold the boots, did he?
And the thing that he said, well, I have to hide those boots. They could cost my life. And the thing that was killing me about it is that, no one can jump to the next level, which is to say, yeah, hell yeah, living on the streets in New York is brutal, horrible, and if you have something that somebody might want, they might kill your ass to get it. And it's just funny that, it's just sort of more stratification, in our society to me. It's like, well, no, people can't make the leap in their mind to the realities of what is going on in this society.
Well, isn't
it? I just thought that was a really good example because the media just wants to show this fluff piece of good deeds.
Oh, absolutely. And isn't it an interesting commentary on this culture that we have a situation where the poorest of the poor are killing each other potentially over $100 pair of boots, but I mean, in most class warfare situations, because, the right wing likes to, it's class warfare if you say we ought to pay taxes. In most class warfare situations, isn't it more a matter of the well-to-do getting bumped off in other, historical precedents?
Yeah. Oh, you mean instead? Yeah, well, no, but we have neoliberalism allows for the setup of disposable people. If they remain quiet, you don't hear about them. But if we have something like Sandy, then it's just all revealed. And unfortunately, the situation with Sandy is just sort of washed over everybody. It's, we're so demented that we don't even care about what's right there, which is old people left to rot and die, people in public housing left to fend for themselves, services are slow or not coming back online. So what does that mean? Are those people going to be subjected to third world conditions permanently because no one gives a shit or there's no political will to come back in there and restore their brutal level that was there with electricity?
Right, and the thing is you can't march some poor person who has electricity down down Broadway in a parade. So consequently, it doesn't have value. I mean, that's the sickness of this culture.
Well, I think it's even more so because I do think there's a level of, well, you had electricity and running water, you don't have it now, and shit, we ain't really loath to bring it back to you. This is This is the extension of it that I'm seeing. I'm like, okay, there's still people there without it, and...
Well, Kate would say, yeah, Kate would say that this is more of that front end of Mad Max world.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a good chance that as we're, as the North America is subjected to climate change or climate catastrophe, you know, you're just going to start just losing whole sections. I mean, if you're not... Yeah, I mean,
look. I mean, let's face facts. I guess everybody, if you watch the commercials, for instance, BP is out there telling you, we spent $23 billion fixing the Gulf Coast, and they're having some of their best tourism seasons ever. Well, they're not saying anything about the shellfish is safe to eat. And the fact of the matter is, New Orleans' population is exactly where people, where certain sectors wanted the New Orleans population to be, because, you know, all of those poor brown people are gone now.
Well, I'm just sort of tripping on the specter of...
And that's how long ago?
I know. Well, if you believe in this runaway climate change scenario, you know, the adaptation is going to be just for some, like everything else in this culture. So, you know, I'm just sort of... you know, sort of spinning out on the idea that there's people, you know, in New Jersey and New York who, are they going to get any services back or not, Bob?
I can't answer that question. And I don't know if anyone can. If the Boners and the Eric Cantors of the world have their way, the answer is no, they won't. Because, well, you know, because remember, that electricity and that running water, that's a social safety net that has become a hammock, as the zombie-eyed Granny Starver put it.
Well, I just, you know, I mean, speaking of him, I mean, this is, I'll read this one quote about their so-called plan. Rejecting President Obama's call to raise taxes for the wealthy, House Republicans availed a counteroffer that would cut Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and other federal programs while raising new revenue by overhauling the tax code. That is what they offer. And they have the nerve to say it in public and with a straight face.
And as we find ourselves forever saying, Sandra, how many millions of Americans for whom that will be life and death are saying, well, I guess we got to do it, Eunice?
Well, no, and yeah, exactly. And the next thing is, you know, what the hell, I always go back to this, you know, Obama should just be saying, see you in January. That should be the extent of it. And because he's not, this is where I'm worried. I'm like, why isn't he? Because it's very easy. Just come back when your new government is in place. Then your 2% on top, they're gone because the law has sunset.
Yeah, and then it's up to them if they want to create middle class tax relief.
Right. I mean,
in honesty, do you think that there's any point in time at which the asylum over which John Boehner presides is going to say, well, okay, let's do the middle class tax relief even without the Bush tax? No, hell no. I mean, I don't think so. They're going to come back and say, okay, we're going to re-up the Bush tax cuts forever, and we'll throw some crusts to what's left of the middle class, and because they can't come off of that. Their base demands it of them.
Yeah, well, but the thing is that this plan right here doesn't even mention the unemployment insurance, the, you know, Social Security destroying reduction in, you know, payroll taxes, on and on and on. And the thing about the Obama administration talking about 400 million or billion or whatever in cuts to Medicare, that's also really bizarre considering he just passed a major overhaul, why in the world would they not just let that law play out to see where the savings are going to fall? Why are they talking about doing anything to the health care after passing that law, letting it go to the Supreme Court, and whatnot? Why are they even, this is the Democrats now, why are they talking about it? It don't make no sense. Unless we're going to be told that entitlement, quote, reform has to happen between now and January. Reform that's going to affect people 20 years down the road.
Well, and see, there's the question. There's the question I want to get to, Sandra, because you and I are of a certain age. We're almost the same age. And I don't know what you were doing when you were 24. But I can vaguely remember what I was doing when I was 24. And I was actually in a newsroom, Sandra, where this stuff was being discussed. And I wasn't out on the streets saying, hey, don't F me. And neither was any of my generation. And so, now we've waited. I'm coming up on 50. And it's our generation. Because, again, as I said, they don't have the guts to really go after the current recipients. Because they know that Granny and Grandma would get out and Granddad would actually get out into the streets because they come from a generation that's not afraid to do that. But so they won't touch current recipients. But once again, it seems like all the mouth noises being made are that you and me and our generation are the ones that need a righteous effing.
Well, the thing is that I keep going back to this because the absurdity. I haven't heard it voiced in so many words with Obama, but they are seriously trying to tell us that somehow to allow the Bush cuts to sunset, which is what they're supposed to do by law, every American who relies on the safety net program is going to have to take one. See, this is the thing that needs to be brought to light with these freaks. Somehow, they have they're trying to convince people that this is right and just, that in order to get rid of these horrible tax cuts that is draining the life out of this country, you're going to have to reconfigure the social safety net that has worked since fucking Roosevelt.
Yeah. That leads back to the question of this false duality. That, if the rich are going to give up something, people have to give up something, too.
No, we don't.
It's ours. And we paid for it. You didn't pay for it. You crashed the economy. You tried to destroy this country with your greed and your avarice. You pay. You pay.
Right. I mean, it's absurd. And it's sort of like, thankfully, I don't hear Obama talking about this or that or another. He actually is telling them, you come up with something, which is a big change on his part.
It's surprising not to see him negotiating with himself.
With himself, right. And that's the thing that, which I will give him credit for and continue to, as long as he is not going to come meet them halfway or any other way. Doesn't have to.
Right, and understand, let's drill down at least one layer here, Sandra, because in talking about putting so-called Obamacare on the table, understand that the fight right now is in the states, and I know you do understand that, and everybody in the Horn family understands that. It's in the states. It's these governors, the decision being made by these governors as to whether or not they'll participate in the Medicaid expansion. I continue to argue that the Medicaid expansion is the underreported, underemphasized, underpublicized key to so-called Obamacare. And so now the fight is in the states. My governor, who recently won re-election by running away from Barack Obama as fast as he could go, I just went to the dock today to for the tasty tune of $600 to go over my blood work. I got relatively good news, but still, and I was told in this little clinic, well, you're uninsured. There's that Obamacare for you. And this by the so-called professional medical staff.
Right. And, well,
And I try to explain to them, no, there is not Obamacare for me. We're still waiting on Earl Ray Tomlin to determine whether or not we're going to participate. This man took $20 million from the federal government to set up a state insurance exchange on the privatized side of this thing, took the money, and then and said that they would set one up, and then ran against Obamacare in the election, and has now said, well, we took the money and we spent the money, but we're not going to set one up. Y'all do it. And he still hasn't decided whether he's going to speak up for the people in this state who work for a living and cannot afford health care.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the bifurcation of this whole law, how it's going to play out. You know, it's unknown. And so for them to be discussing any changes on the program that's working is absurd.
Well, and remember that the first 5 years of the Medicaid expansion are 100% paid for. And that's what's important here.
I know.
And so by putting it on the table, because, again, I don't know how to say it in language that will make it clear, except to try again, the Medicaid expansion is the possibility, it is the hope, it is the dream of everybody who's ever said we need universal single-payer health care. Okay, you know, we wanted this and we wanted that during the interminable discussions over the bill, but that Medicaid expansion is the so-called camel's nose under the tent as far as universal single-payer is concerned. So if the Republicans can get that on the budget discussion debate table, then they can defund the money that's already funded for the expansion and thereby kill, once again, any hope of a growing universal single-payer. Because, you know, this expansion is at 138%. It is conceivable it could be just as CHIPS was, bumped up to 160%, and eventually we're at 250, and then 300, and we've got universal single payer health care.
Yeah, no, I.
And how many on our side actually understand that, Sandra?
Well, I think Obama does. That's his signature legislation. So, you know, it's hard to imagine that is what, you know, that he would even entertain that. I mean, that's the thing. You have to rely on. You know, I mean, he didn't do that to have it after the Supreme Court, to have it completely obliterated by the likes of Boehner. I mean, I could be wrong, but I just don't see that happening. So we'll see. I mean, I'm concerned about the 400. I don't know what they're talking about, the 400 million or whatever they think they're going to cut from Medicare. I don't know. But it could just be, you know, just crazy talk, because they still are trying to convince us that all this has to happen in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it can't. I mean, it just
can't.
You know,
it's absurd. So, you know,
And just one other story out there on the other side of the coin. All of this discussion is from the right wing is predicated on the idea that it is the recipients of Medicare and Medicaid who are the problem. You know, we're going to the doctor too damned much, right?
Well, it's just been proven to be a lie in every other study that I've ever heard about, though. It's a joke.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. There is something coming down the pipe. You remember when Bill the Cat Killer Frist, who had run a major healthcare organization, his company, got busted for the biggest Medicare fraud in American history a few years back?
Yeah.
Well, there's another one coming. There is this massive chain of dialysis outfits called DaVita. They're headquartered, I think, in Denver. They've got like 200 locations. And it looks like the axe may be about to fall on them because they were allegedly perpetrating a gigantic Medicare fraud, you know, for dialysis. And there's a lot of people that need dialysis and what they
do. Isn't this a scandal with doctors and nurses and all kinds of medical people involved?
Right, where corporate said, listen, we're billing for a shitload of medication. You need to throw that all in the garbage so we can rebill.
Mm. Yeah, I vaguely heard about that case. That's it, yeah.
But what it does is it once again shows us that the problems inside Medicare are not problems related to people going to the doctor too much. It is the for-profit healthcare industry that is once again raping the system, and it is the recipients and the beneficiaries who are being blamed for it.
Right. I mean, which goes again, which shows that this private and this sort of socialized medicine can't really coexist, because the private is forever attacking and trying to extract from that existing more efficient system. I mean, so now we're just talking about rentiers and oligarchs yet again, right?
Right.
Well,
gouging and gouging and gouging.
Yeah. No, it's
and
true.
And the guy who runs this DaVita company is apparently a real Lulu. Dresses in Renaissance medieval clothing and that kind of stuff, and makes people shout DaVita, DaVita at the corporate convention. You know, one of the yuck.
Wow, yeah.
From the sounds of things, desperately needs to be in the vertical bar hotel.
Right.
You know, do the perp walk.
Yeah, it's too much. Listen, I have to mention, I really am not a fan of Jason Whitlock, the Kansas City writer. He bugs me. But
yeah.
I have to give it to him on that, and you could have knocked my ass over with Bob Costas. I mean, maybe he, in his rarefied existence, didn't realize what the hell he was talking about, right?
Well, maybe, or maybe, you know, I don't think Bob Costas knows about anything that happens outside the Lower East Side.
Well, I'm just saying, because, you know, I was surprised, but he, you know, it made so much common sense, but we, who know how the right operate, I knew his ass would be attacked momentarily.
Oh, right, and again, it's valuable, because he could, you know, he's an institution, right? He can say it and get away with it.
But we don't need to hear it from him. We need to hear it from policymakers.
Yeah. But you know, don't hold your breath waiting on that.
Oh, no, I know. But I thought, you know, it was just kind of, you know, this whole idea that something is too fresh. I mean, how did that whole meme attain the power that it has? It's unbelievable. Because is it too fresh to talk about that idiot who shot another black teenager? Is that too fresh?
Yep, too fresh.
You know, which was another thing that really just did my head in. I'm like, you know, that poor child was just sitting in the car.
Yeah, in the back seat.
In the back seat, doing what kids do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I'd kind of like to know what... I mean, we just have to deal with reality here, Sandra. I'd like to know if everybody in the car was of color, or if he was the only one.
I have no idea, but I'm stuck on the idea that cracker pulled up to the car.
Yeah, but that, I mean, there's not a hell of a lot of difference between that and Zimmerman. I'm afraid. Therefore, I'm going to go and confront the person of whom I am afraid. Bang, dead.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just craziness. And, I mean, there is no upside to this except for he was charged with second-degree murder, right?
Right, and you know, but I'm sorry, I've still got that question. How the hell is that second-degree murder?
Sounds like he should be full-on first-degree murder. With, you know, some sort of capital crime. Just, they're always happy to charge everybody and anybody with a capital crime. Why not this freak?
Well, no, not everybody and anybody. Now, if that was some black dude who had gone up and shot a white kid...
Yeah, maybe. It'd be a different... Yeah, it'd be
It'd be first-degree murder, and they'd be hotting up old Sparky.
Yeah, well, at any rate, it's just sort of, you know, another... You know, all these mothers got to be holding on for dear life to their young black child, you know, male child. I'm just sort of like, I mean, it's stunning. It's sick. I mean, if you're a black male, you can't act up at all, or you got risk being shot. You can't be somewhere where someone is mouthing off. It's like Emmett Till revisited over and over and over and over and over again.
And again, and again, and again.
And again, and again. It's just sort of like, what the hell? So, yeah, that sort of freaked me right out. I was just like, oh, my God. But I'm also disturbed that, wait a minute, you got some football player laying out his fiance and then blowing his head off, and you got to play that game?
Oh, hell yeah, the game's got to be played.
I was like, wow, okay, you know, so it's just brutal all around.
It is. I mean, damn it, there is money to be made. I mean, what are we going to do, reschedule? I mean, that costs money. I mean, refund ticket prices, even in Kansas City, that matters.
Yeah, anyway, I just...
But, Jim's point about the head injuries and everything is valid, too. The Players Association is howling about head injuries and head trauma. And the ownership, and, you know, the owners just, well, you know, we're doing the best that we can. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but did you see, there was this
article... I mean, did you see that dude get knocked senseless, the Seattle receiver, yesterday?
No, I didn't.
I mean, he left the planet. And it was one of those hits. I mean, it wasn't dirty per se. It's just football. But I mean, a guy from the Bears comes over and just lays him out with a blow exactly to the area between the shoulders and the bottom of the cranium, and dude's head looked like in slow mo looked like a bobblehead. Just, I mean, you could almost hear his brains moving.
Well, I mean,
and then there was a 5-minute discussion over whether he still had possession of the football at the time that he crossed the goal line before he let go of it because he had been knocked senseless.
Wow,
yeah, it was
wow.
Sidney Rice, Marty telling me. Sidney Rice. I mean, it was an ugly, ugly hit. But, you know, there's a downside to the fact that this armor, this body armor that they wear has been, it weaponizes them.
Well, I mean, yeah, you should have seen this Slate article. It just had sort of a long list of one NFL player and, you know, domestic abuse after another. It was just like something like 20% of the teams have people who are dealing with domestic abuse. They've been charged with it, blah, blah, blah. So it's just kind of rife in that organization, as you can probably imagine. So a lot of these women
there's an unacknowledged, I think, save for the fact that Costas brought it up and Whitlock as well, and I agree with you about him, by the way. But there's an unacknowledged gun culture inside the NFL that very closely mirrors the gun culture in the population at large. I mean, remember Plaxico Burress plugging himself?
Well, and he made an appearance yesterday. Yeah, that scared me. But anyway, sorry.
We don't dare talk about it. I just got done reading, Sandra, I just got done reading Doris Kearns Goodwin's Team of Rivals, which was a magnificent book. And I couldn't, and I had finished the book on the same day that they were discussing this Kansas City story. And I couldn't help thinking, you know, 1865, April 15th, 1865, a Confederate sympathizer actor gains access to the presidential box, puts a ball in the back of the president's head, okay? Even at that point in time, pistols were only useful for limited purposes. They were for killing other people. They are, always have been and always will be. They're not for hunting. They're not for going to war, you know, as a member of a well-regulated militia. And even then, even though Edwin Stanton put on this massive search to get to round up all the conspirators and probably got more than he needed, you know, insofar as they hanged Mary Surratt. But even then, we didn't do anything about it. So a few years later, Garfield gets murdered. A few years later, McKinley gets murdered. This country has no will whatsoever for way over 150 years to talk about handguns. And the thing is, I think we can have a separate conversation because, you know, in Kansas City, you know, he didn't shoot himself in the head with a .30-06 hunting rifle, and he didn't shoot her with one either. It's not just a firearm discussion; it is a handgun discussion.
Yeah,
and we can't have it.
No. I mean, you know, not a peep from the policymakers on that story. Nothing. You know what I mean? It just sort of.
But the thing I think that presents the gravest or the phenomenon that presents the gravest danger to our country is that we have this growing list of things we can't talk about. We can't talk about handgun violence because, well, the only way we can talk about that is sooner or later somebody will blame it on his being black. Okay? I mean, we just know that, well, you know. We know they will sooner if it hasn't happened already. And add, you know, and we have another thing on our list of stuff we can't talk about, and that's climate change. Old hatchet face in Arizona, Jan Brewer.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a 40-year baseball glove that looks better than her.
I ain't gonna disagree.
So she was delivering a major speech on energy this past weekend. And before the speech, he asked a question about global warming. And she went up to the reporter afterwards and said, well, where in the hell did that come from? And then told 3TV News in Arizona, everybody has an opinion on it, you know, and I probably don't believe that it's man-made. I believe that, you know, that weather and certain elements are controlled by maybe different things. You know, that's okay, like what Marco Rubio said. I'm not a scientist, man.
No, but...
but we can't talk about that either.
Well, no, but in the meanwhile, every poll is now pointing towards 70 and above people are believing this shit. You know, it's, you know, it's incredible. It's like, all of a sudden, more than half the Americans believe in this. And it could be due to, oh, wait... horrible emergency and climate disasters right in their own town. That will make you believe something if it's right in your fucking face.
Right. I mean, and, you know, your governor of Arizona, you're going to pay a brutal price, especially in light of the fact that we're learning that most of these estimations are conservative estimates.
Well, I have to share this with you because I don't, this article is from Mother Jones, like from 2010. Did you know that, there was a study that placed, it used, Thoreau's, I guess he was a naturalist and he kept really good records of the flowers and stuff.
No.
And, and they're in Massachusetts, and somehow these scientists were able to use his information to tell how warm the Earth was at that time, which was in the 1840s. And they came back in 2008 or 9 and looked at these same plants again, and they have like determined that the plants are telling them that the Earth is actually at 2.4 degrees C right now.
Whoa.
So, I mean, there's a lot of different information out there, and most of it is really, really scary. And, you know, you have to start thinking that the international, the ICs, what is that? You know that group out of the UN?
Yeah.
You know, their report from 2007 is 5 years old. And the next report won't be coming out from them for 2 more years, yet they're not going to count the melting of the permafrost in their estimates. So, you know, I mean, we can easily sit here and think they're woefully underestimating it at the behest of the various interests, governments, and everything else. But just from my own research, you know, it's not. It sounds like we're, you know, already in some sort of horrible feedback loop, and it sounds pretty runaway to me already. But, you know, feel free to talk me down.
Sorry, can't do it. Because you're not sitting talking. This is not crazy talk. It is, if you spend any time on it whatsoever, Sandra, terrifying.
Well, this is just me using my, you know, half-assed library skills. And, you know, Bob, I'm finding some pretty fucked up shit.
Yeah, in addition to those half-assed, you know, it's half-assed skills on short time, too. It's not like you're sitting there for hours digging through the 132nd thousand result you found on Google.
No,
it pops. That stuff, that's all you got to do is put in the search phrase, and that stuff pops.
And, you know, it's just kind of, it's just, what's really disturbing is, like you're saying, the, underestimating. And the sort of, the feedback loop thing is what really should worry everybody. That's the thing that's really disturbing. That's what's going on that I find disturbing, because there's no kind of, you can't put the permafrost back in the ground.
No.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but it seems
once again, underlying all of this, yes, they were conservatively estimated because the scientists did not want to be accused of being Chicken Little.
No, but the scientists are on the verge of being complicit, though, if they don't come correct. This is where I'm at now. I'm like, oh, no, you know, these are some scary numbers, and I thought that if you have ice-free Arctic, that's another loop that's been breached once that occurs.
Yeah, and, you know, Waggy in the chat room just said, I think we're too late. The atmosphere has about a 50-year delay to changes in inputs.
Yeah, I heard it was 30, but 50, 30, hey. But what we're looking at, though, and, you know, I'm happy to be wrong, we're not talking about no 2100 up in this motherfucker.
We're living it right now.
No, exactly, but...
We are talking about, since I mentioned you and I being of a certain age, we're talking about conceivably beginning to see the front end of the really nasty shit in our lifetimes. Oh, wait a minute. We're already seeing the front end of the nasty shit.
Well, when I read from various different reputable, peer-reviewed science journals, because I'm not as afraid of trying to read some of that, I'm seeing ice-free 2014 in the Arctic. I'm seeing 3.6% heat, you know, in 2030. You know, just some crazy.
Right, but remember the CEO of who was it, Shell or ExxonMobil or whoever. We're just gonna move north. Wait a minute. Well, we maybe could have moved north, but some of that really nice land that we could have moved north onto is a toxic waste goo pit from where they're doing, you know, the tar sands.
Well, anyway, I mean, you know, I don't know. I just am kind of, I guess I find myself skeptical in my mind just because there's no sort of mobilization. Then I think, oh, wait. That, you know, I'm living in a culture where it's propagandized to death and the mobilization can't happen because the fossil fuel cigarette company type situation is going on.
Yeah, deny. One thing I noticed, I happened to catch, I don't know how it happened, but I saw I think it was the BP ad. And, give these oil industry companies credit for at least probably the hardest working PR machines in the world. Because there was the BP ad, and they're talking about, the best tourism seasons I've ever seen. And then there's that split second edit where it shows somebody in a white lab coat standing in front of some wind turbines. And I'm like, you slimy bastards. And then I got I saw something on Facebook today that, you know, Chevron is concerned about AIDS. Well, good. I'm glad you are. And this PR release about how, you know, Chevron is affected by AIDS. Our friends, our coworkers, have to deal with this. And I'm not discounting it. You understand what I mean, right? But, you know what, Chevron? Why don't y'all worry about making the fact that you're making the planet uninhabitable for people who are AIDS-free or non-AIDS-free? Why don't y'all worry about what you're doing to the planet? Because there's damn sure got to be some pretty competent folks out there to deal with HIV. There is not a hydrocarbon solution to HIV.
Well,
am I just coming across as an asshole on that? Or
I don't know. I mean, it's their whole existence is literally the catalyst that's going to sort of make this place not inhabitable, from what I can tell. And the idea that we have a industry that is not accountable to their externalities is just stunning, when the externality is the destruction of the world.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know how else to put it. And just as in, just talking in terms of market solutions, why is it that they aren't being held to account for that, those externalities? They need to be made to pay cash for it.
Right. That goes back to the old discussion, Sandra, about the difference between cap and trade, which was a bullshit attempt to marketize and monetize this. Wait a minute. Okay, we're roasting the planet. Is there any way we can make a buck on that? Oh, cap and trade. We don't need cap and trade. There were a couple of EPA lawyers a few years back who got removed from their positions because they were saying, no, we don't need cap and trade. We need cap and tax.
Right, and yeah, tax, where, you know, they're forced to not use these reserves that are priced in their stock price. I mean, you know, we seem to be in a situation that is damn near guarantees your grandkids not being able to carry on. I'm sorry.
I don't want to get all gloom and doom, but I don't think I'm getting gloom and doom if we just deal with reality. I want to take all, as soon as we find them, Sandra, I want to take those things off of the list that the for-profit media have declared to be forbidden, and I want to talk about them. It used to be religion and politics. Now it's climate change, handgun violence, the collapsing infrastructure of the country. We apparently are not allowed, as you've noted, we're not allowed to talk about the stuff that we have paid for, things like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. We're not allowed to demand that they leave that alone because it's ours, damn it. We have to play nice on the playground with the 1%, and we have to give up some of the things that we worked hard for so that they'll give up some of their taxes, some of their money that they worked hard for. See, it'll all be better.
And it's just a bit of a worry, but it all just pales in the face of this, shall we just call it, the feedback loop.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Because that stuff is, it's just so freaky, because it's on such a sort of, you know, we're back in the sort of outer space again, Bob, when you're trying to wrap your head around these sort of bubbling methane business in Russia and all this kind of madness, where it was 1 kilometer wide last year, now it's 5. Hello?
Right. A note just came in from our buddy Ray. He said, I know, Bob, let's knock down some more mountains. That'll fix it.
Anyway, I'm sorry I keep drifting back, because it's only because I've just been doing like mega amounts of reading on this stuff, and I'm just kind of gobsmacked, and I don't understand why this isn't on the front page day in and day out at this point.
Well, remember that general manager at the TV station in Maine who said, we will talk about global warming when Bar Harbor is underwater. You know, you want to take that bastard out and, okay, here, swim. Now can we talk about it? You know, or maybe put him in Far Rockaway and see if we can talk about it. But on the other side of that, I saw a headline we had stopped for gas or something on the way home, Sandra, and I read as much of it as I could. I saw a headline in one of the Virginia papers as we were driving home, and lo and behold, the federal government, you know, we get so disgusted by seeing these stories. The federal government today opened up 90 bajillion acres of leased lands for oil drilling leases. Well, lo and behold, this headline said federal government opens up leases for wind turbines offshore, off the Virginia coast, and I guess the Maryland coast, you know, that general area. And I thought, okay, that's not bad. I can live with that. But by the same token, just because of the sick way my mind works now, I can't wait to see the report from Newsmuck or Wingnut Daily or the Cato Institute or the Heritage Foundation saying that this is the we've gotten into the HOV fast lane to communism now because we're going to have wind turbines off the Virginia coast. Yeah, it seems like, I guess our frustration is that in 2012 we would like to think we ought not be taking baby steps anymore, that we ought to actually be up toddling around the climate house, as it were. But in fact, this is a baby step. Okay, let's put some wind turbines where some assholes would otherwise put drilling platforms.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems like policy is sort of strangling subsidies for that sort of energy and maintaining the fossil fuel subsidies.
Right, you know that the wind tax credit is on the so-called table.
That's what I'm saying. We're going, we seem to be going backwards. But anyway, listen, I gotta go because I have to.
Yeah,
I think I'm gonna make dinner or something.
I think I heard it. I think I heard a youngin' in the background.
No, it's true. Anyway, listen, I don't even know how to end it. Not even anything smart or catchy. Sorry about that.
I don't know. At least we can say that Tim Tebow was in street clothes this weekend.
Oh God, he can just go away, please, please. Anyway, so have a safe trip.
Thank you, Sandra. Take care now. Bye now. Our buddy Sandra calling via Skype. You know, you can get in on Skype, too. Via Skype, the handle, the account, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. That's how you get in on Skype. But let's go back to the regular telephone works right now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, this is Bob Kincaid.
This is.
Yeah, I listened to you. I just started listening to you, and I was actually surprised because I couldn't believe that someone with your vocal inflection was actually saying what you were saying. And at first I thought, wait, maybe he's making fun of, progressives.
No, I'm the real deal.
No, I totally know that. I just...
Just for friendliness sake, can I have a first name?
Oh, yeah, John.
Oh, okay, John. Cool. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I couldn't believe, the first time I heard you, because I listen to Mike Malloy sometimes. And Norman Goldman, and I was like, wait, this guy, does he realize that he's, he's making progressive points? So, no, I mean, I as far as, the energy thing, I totally agree. There's really no money for, renewable fuels. I mean, it's just not there. It's not, I just don't see it being there either. I mean, do you really think that the politicians are going to be like, listen, we don't want the donations from the energy companies. We just want to pick up wind power.
Yeah, and it's been proven, if you've only been listening for a little while, there's a couple of points that I've been making about news that doesn't get reported. You know, the storm, Sandy, blew across some wind farms. They're out there. They really are. At least I think they are. And I haven't seen any stories about detritus from collapsed wind turbines, industrial wind turbines, washing up on the Jersey Shore. Right, because, those things are meant to operate in 400-mile-an-hour winds.
Right.
Yeah, so when that kind of stuff like Sandy blows across them, they just make more energy. Now, I guess you could argue that maybe a storm surge or something would impact them, but I'm guessing it wouldn't. But that story's not out there. But for instance, with Sandra talking about what's happening with folks in the projects and subsidized housing and so forth, not having water, not having electricity. If we've got a distributed grid there, that doesn't happen. And we know that a distributed grid exists and can work. I mean, Germany does it. They have, 27 minutes of power outages a year in Germany. We have it measured in half months.
Yeah, but there's such a massive connection here between the media companies and the politicians and the energy companies that there's no way that, I mean, of course you're right. The infrastructure exists and we know it can be done. But do you really think that, CNN or NBC or any of these media companies are going to say, look, people, this can be done because, it's being done in Germany? They're not going to say that. They're going to say, they're going to make it the myth that they've always made it. They'll be like, oh, it's some utopian dream that's, many years in the future. It's nothing that's going to happen now.
Right, and of course, there's a certain element in this country that cannot stand the notion, whether it be the Chinese, the Germans, or whomever, they cannot tolerate. We're number one.
Right, like the coal companies. You know, they can't say, oh, look, you can get clean energy. They'll say, you know, oh, that's way too far in the future. It's not even feasible. So, I mean, it just seems like a joke. It's like there are all these things that can obviously be done. You know, it's a joke that people are like, oh, listen, you got to give more money to the rich because they create jobs. You know, it's the same kind of sort of corporate myth of, you know, doing the right thing is just way too hard. That won't happen for hundreds of years, and it won't even work then.
No, it won't, and neither does trickle down economics. Let's just cut to the chase. Neither does 99.9% of all Republican economic so-called theory, because I can't call it theory. It's fantasy. It's hallucination. It's because it's not grounded in anything resembling reality, is it?
No, and it's the same thing with Grover Norquist. You know, it's the same kind of principle. It's like he's like, listen, give the money to the rich. They'll create jobs. Don't raise taxes on them because you want them to create jobs. Well, for the past decade, or at least under Bush, they were given massive tax breaks and they didn't create anything. In fact, what was it under Bush? They were losing hundreds of thousands of jobs a month.
Well, yeah, George Bush went through 8 years of his presidency, which we miraculously seem to have forgotten, without creating one job. Not one, John. Not one.
Yeah.
But we just went through an election cycle, and, well, that Kenyan Muslim with the deep-seated hatred of white people and an anti-colonialist the tendency, he's not creating it. He said he'd create a billion jobs, and we've only got 9.9 trillion, whatever. Again, they don't exist in a world that operates on a model of reality. they just babble crazy shit and wait for a certain percentage of the American people to say, well, that's right, Marbleine. By God, we're going to have to give up our Social Security. Get me a can of little Friskies, would you, while you're out?
and the thing with that whole the whole Kenyan thing, it's like, I just couldn't believe it. It's like, seriously, they get vetted, you know, they get vetted. You know, President Obama was a politician before. The CIA did a background check, I'm sure of this. You know, are these people saying the CIA is just too incompetent to find out where he was born? I mean, is that what they're saying?
Orly Tates, the birther queen, just got bounced. I mean, Jesus, how bad is it, John? Orly Tates, the birther queen, just got bounced out of Orange County Court in California.
You know, well, the fact that she's lasted that long is what totally baffles me. It's like, that's the frustrating thing. It's like, obviously what they're saying, you know, like you said, it's not even reality. So why is it so persistent? Why is it such a constant story in the media over and over? It's like the whole, you know, O'Reilly the other day was like, oh, Christianity is not a religion. Really? Really? He's saying there's a war.
What?
Well, you heard that, right?
No.
Oh, you didn't hear that on O'Reilly?
No. I try to make a real decided point of missing O'Reilly.
I totally don't blame you. I understand that faux news is complete BS, pardon my French. But yeah, no, what he said was that Christianity is a philosophy, not a religion.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead. God, where's the tequila bottle?
No, I'm not a fan of Fox News. I happen to see this one. I think it was Ross.
It's not a religion with the incense, and I mean, it's the Christmas season, the incense, and the robes, and the silk, and the lights, and the candles, and the singing, and the choirs, and the my daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy plays dominoes, and the crackers, and the grape juice, and it's not a religion?
Well, the pure irony was that at the same time that he was saying people were against Christmas, he's saying that Christianity is not a religion. So it's like, okay, you know, you can't omit one fact just to save another. It doesn't work that way. So I just don't get the whole thing. It's ridiculous. It's like, you know, if you go over to, if you ask opinions of people in like Canada, Europe, you know, places where there's, you know, relative civilization and actual fact being discussed, they just can't believe. They're like, what are these people talking about? How is this even discussed in the news? How is it even called news? I think the fact that it's so persistent is what is so frustrating. It's not so much, you know, obviously it's wrong, but the fact that it's wrong so constantly and still so, you know, so repeated, it's like what century are we living in?
Well, we established a principle a long time ago, John, that Fox News is a brand name. It is not a description of the business they're in. They're an entertainment business. Fox News is a brand name the way Lucky Charms cereal is a brand name. There's nothing lucky or charming about those dried out little marshmallows in the box of freaking sugar bomb poison. But that's what they're called. Just like Fox News is called Fox News. It's not entertainment for the ladies and gentlemen's auxiliary of the John Birch Society.
Yeah, but I mean, we basically had a war, and I don't know how many soldiers died in this, but something like at least almost, what, like 4,000 died in Iraq so far or more? And basically the entire sort of premise for it was Fox News and the media and Judith Miller saying, listen, this is definitely a fact. We know it. And then afterwards they were like, oh wait, it wasn't a fact.
No, we didn't say that. Yeah,
no, I'm not saying.
We never said that he really had those things. We said there were weapons of mass destruction, program-related activity ideas.
Okay, but it's kind of like the difference between saying there's a wild bear outside and there could be a giant wild bear outside. It's like, all right, you're still going to get freaked out by the fact that there might be a giant wild bear outside.
Right. Or you know, the fact that your next-door neighbor has a gallon can of gasoline that he uses to put in his lawnmower. But, you know, he might use that to burn you out someday. So burn him out first.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand, like, why they think there's any sort of... I mean, it's the whole, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater. How is that even legal? That's what I understand. How are there thousands of American troops that have died in Iraq for something that, what, Valerie Plame said, okay, this doesn't exist? And yet everyone was like, oh, no, the CIA doesn't know what they're talking about. What?
Yeah, and again... See, what Fox does best is to challenge reality with that fantasy we were talking about, John. They challenge our ability to remain grounded in a fact-based world by just bombarding us with fantasy, the psychosis-driven, imaginary nightmares. Yeah, I mean, look. Let's go all the way down to the ground with the birther issue. So what? So what? I mean, I can see. I remember back before we found out he was the Gropinator. I found out that the Republicans. Well, you know, we need to change the Constitution because Arnold would make a great president, but he can't right now because he was born in Austria.
Right.
And that all just really went away really fast, A, after we found out he was Der Gruppenführer, and B, after, you know, after that one began running for president. You know, the business with Orly Tates. Marty just wrote in, so Tates, again, you know, her name just drives me crazy. It does. It sounds like a bubble in a bathtub. But
apparently they think Bobby Jindal's okay.
Yeah. The Louisiana exorcist.
Right. The
Tates got bounced this time for trying to sue Occidental College for Obama's application to college and his grades.
I just don't get that. Like, look, I understand, you know, it's good. Freedom of speech is awesome. The First Amendment is great. That's totally awesome. And I respect the fact that she has, I don't know what you'd call it, but, you know, she's like, listen, I'm gonna recognize the First Amendment and do this. But at the same time, it's like, this isn't even, it's like a circus. It's like, you know, a clown bouncing from one side of the circus to the other, and now she's finally, you know, they're like, yeah, you know, we want the next act. So I don't even understand, I mean, like you were saying, it's like, you said Fox News, they basically just, you know, they trick us. They say, okay, we got this reality, but it's not the one that actually exists. But at the same time, we're like, oh, we're so educated and advanced, and yet we're sending thousands of people to die for what? For something that says, that Valerie Plame says doesn't exist.
Kind of makes your head hurt, doesn't it?
It's it's baffling because there's so many points of correction that everyone seems to ignore. It's like, okay, this is obviously what makes that wrong. You know, it refutes it. It's not right. Look here, look here, look here, look here. It's the whole connect the dots thing. You know, connect these dots and realize that Valerie Plame was right. You know, connect these dots and realize that Fox News is complete propaganda. How is it not being connected? You know, we say we're educated, we say we've got all this knowledge, this information, and yet at the same time, how much of it is actually utilized for our benefit?
Yeah, no argument here. It's that thing that seems to happen in this country where, what's the old phrase that we're amusing ourselves to death? You can go over to the Hunting Channel and learn how to make duck noises with your two hands. You can go over to MTV. MTV has a new program out about West Virginians that's going to show us all that it's going to be the one step up from the wild, wonderful whites of West Virginia. There's something out there for everybody to make sure that nobody is actually paying attention to what's going on. And it really is. It's very Orwellian. It's also very Brave New. It's also very Huxley.
Well, do you think that the whole Orwellian, what is it, the 2-minute hate thing? Do you think that applies in all this? Is that, you know, where do you see that fitting into the modern discussion, the modern atmosphere?
It's been a while since I read 1984, so elaborate on that just a little bit, please.
Well, basically, the concept was that, you know, every once in a while, you got to find someone else you got to hate, someone, some other group that's either inferior or that can be looked down upon.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. This entire culture here in the 21st century is predicated on that. The entirety of right wing broadcasting is predicated on that. Whether it was Limbaugh inveighing against Sandra Fluck, oh, she wants us to pay for her prostitution, my friends. Or everything that was said about the immigrant population, everything is designed to create an atmosphere of someone else to hate that keeps us from confronting the actual root causes of our problems.
That's another thing too. Like right there, the thing you just mentioned, it's like Rush Limbaugh can point out, you know, Sandra Fluke and prostitution, but he can't point out David Vitter and prostitution. It's like this glaring, like, okay, the facts are here, but you want to go over here and create some BS myth. That's such, obviously, you know, you're right. Of course, Fox is propaganda. They're going to keep doing this. They're not going to stop doing it. And the more people talk about it, the more they're going to do it, obviously. So I'm, you know, it's kind of like I'm contradicting my own point by even talking about them. But at the same time, I mean, these are serious issues. It's like this whole thing in Benghazi. It's like, what are they talking about? What are they saying? Are they saying the CIA and Obama encouraged it? Is that what they're saying? And at the same time, there's so many, like I said before, there's so many points of obvious contradiction to that sort of line of BS that it's totally baffling.
Well, they are, they have desperate philosophical problems, but from a political strategy standpoint, the right wing are way out ahead of us because they're not thinking about the 2016 presidential election. They're thinking about the 2020. Okay? They're in a trap. They're in a demographic trap that they can't get out of, and they're right, desperately trying to find a way to remain relevant, hence the current fascination with Marco Rubio. See, we've got a guy with a vowel on the end of his name. See? We like you.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But they can't get out of the box that they're in because their demographic is cranky old white people. And there's no getting around it and no getting away from it. But somehow they're desperately out there trying to fit because they know what's going to happen in the next 4 years because they've got history to look back at. It took Bill Clinton 8 years of nasty ass, old school austerity, things like so-called welfare reform that God knows how many people it killed.
Right.
NAFTA, God knows how many people that reduced to poverty, on and on and on. But it took him 8 years, but he actually put money back in the Treasury. I said in 2008 that the Republicans really didn't want the presidency. And I think while they convinced themselves that they might get it, they didn't really want it that bad this time either, because they know what a Democrat will do. They know that only a Democrat can cripple the social safety net that they so despise, and they're trying to put Obama in a box where he puts us not at the table but on the menu.
I understand.
And by 2016, we may be beginning to crawl out of this mess. Remember that historically, look at where FDR was at the end of his second term. Okay, he was basically getting ready to start his third term in January 1941. Okay, the Second World War had started in Europe and it had been going on for a while in Asia. We weren't in it yet, but we had begun by fits and starts to get well from the Depression. And suddenly the Republicans were interested in having the presidency again. Well, they have that problem got sorted out because there's not going to be a third Obama term. So they know that whatever's in the Treasury, they can come and steal again if they can come up with somebody to get the presidency in 2016. Does any of this, am I just babbling or does it make sense?
No. I think you're referring to the Jude Winiski Santa Claus 2 Santa Claus theory, where the Democrats come in and they build up the Treasury and the Republicans come in and they say, oh, look, we've got all this money, we're going to spend it, and then they blame the Democrats for, you know, the next time around, they say, oh, look, you know, there's...
The tax and spend Democrats.
Right, and the whole myth of, I mean, whenever I hear Republicans talk about fiscal conservatism, I'm like, what are you talking about? What? There's no conservative in fiscal anything at all except for plundering and money laundering, which is basically what the whole Halliburton thing was. I mean, it's like... Seriously, you're not conservative with anything fiscal. I mean, that's what the Republicans aren't.
Right. So, they're only conservative with other people's money, to wit, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, anything that smacks of a social safety net that has a multiplier benefit for all Americans, things like extending unemployment benefits past the 99th week, that kind of thing. That they're conservative on, and their conservatism is defined as being... you've got something we want. I've been working with this metaphor for a long time, or not metaphor, but this slogan for a long time. It's very simple, it's very sweet, it's very easy, and if we would all understand it and just talk it a lot, we would begin to make progress where the GOP and the conservatives and the libertarians and the birchers and the birthers and deathers and tenthers and other assorted booger eaters are concerned. Look, it's this easy. They want it all. Okay? They don't want some of what we've got. They want all of what we've got. They took a big portion of it in the late 80s and early 90s when they raided pension funds, and instead of having guaranteed pension benefits, we moved into this brave new world of 401ks. Well, guess where all that money went? That money was taken out of pension funds and pumped into the stock market.
Right.
Okay? And that is their conduit whereby they rip us off. Because if they can get Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, they'll pump that into the stock market too, and then that will be wealth redistribution around to their 1% buddies.
Right. Well, their constant sort of strategy is blame, at the same time do exactly what you're blaming.
Right.
Words,
any decent psychologist could tell you that they have a raging case of transference.
Right. Right, where they're projecting their own actions onto someone else.
Yeah, projection too. Let's not forget projection. You're absolutely right. Well, I'm awfully glad you have found the program, John. I hope we'll hear from you some more. And by all means, tell your friends and neighbors.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing. You are definitely a completely awesome person. I mean, that's an understatement.
I will tell my wife you said that, and maybe that might get me a cup of coffee in the morning.
I hope so. And thank you.
Thank you, John. Have a good evening. And while I will be gone for the next 4 days, I hope we'll hear from you in the very near future.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, John. Bye.
Have a great evening. Thank you.
Bye. Love to hear from new callers. Look, this is an ongoing conversation. This is an ongoing dialogue, and it is, I hope, what makes this a little bit special, because a lot of this can't happen in other formats and in other profitized, commercialized modalities. So thank you very much for your call, John. And look, if you've ever thought about calling the program and just couldn't quite work up the nerve, listen, if you can't call this program and survive, well, yeah, no, I'm kidding. But I don't think we've ever lost a caller yet. Jim pointing out, based upon John's conversation, he says, Fox News is counter-information and speaks in antonyms. Not even good propaganda appealing causes inimical to any rational solution. But see, that's the thing. They don't have to be rational. They're Fox. And they don't expect their viewers to be rational. Don just wrote in. He said, Don and Maureen in Phoenix, great show tonight. I know I'm stating the obvious, but there will be no movement or attempts to develop alternative energy sources until the oil companies figure out how to make money from it. Till then, they'll fight against alternative energy like wind and solar. Have a good and safe trip. Thank you, Don and Maureen. And I think you're right. As with all things in this country, nothing happens until somebody figures out how to make a buck out of it. And it's that simple. You would think, however, that would be there in terms of alternative energy because it's working in other parts of the planet. My God, you know, everybody says, well, you know, if we were to cut our carbon, not everybody, the right wingers, if we were to cut our carbon emissions, that wouldn't really do nothing because, see, China and India, they're out there and they're going to go crazy, right? Because, see, everybody wants a car in China and India. And everybody wants electricity. And see, they're going to burn their coal and they're going to make a real mess of things. And even if we stop doing it, it ain't going to make no difference. Which, of course, is a complete and total lie. But, hello, note to capitalist America. If you would get busy on the technologies, maybe you would not be getting your clock cleaned by the Germans and the Chinese who are way out in front of you on these technologies. Can we still do that? Can we still be innovators in the new United States of America where we can do anything except things that the Republicans tell us we can't do? Because there's lots of money to be made in China and India. I mean, can you imagine the spinning wind turbines during the monsoon? Hello? Anybody? Bueller? Saudi freaking Arabia, for Christ's sakes, is putting up all the solar they can build, and they plan to sell it to the rest of the Middle East. I mean, these people have lived and died by oil, and they know it's going away. I mean, our captains of industry, our great multi-millionaire, billionaire CEOs are supposed to be the smartest people on the goddamn planet. But nobody's told them that the sun has been shining for billions of years and will likely shine for billions more. That the wind will continue to blow. I mean, who's going to swab their toilets if we're all dead from climate change? God almighty! But, you know, Don and Maureen are right. Somebody's got to figure out a way to make a buck off of it. And there's a huge market. And the American and American corporate... Well, no, we're taxed enough already. We ain't going to get into that because y'all probably want to bonus pay taxes on us. Fuck you. Yeah, and going back to some of the Fox stuff, by the way. God, it's 16 minutes before the hour, and I hate for the show to end because we're not going to be talking for a while, and that grieves me. I gotta find. Oh, please let it still be here. I gotta find a particular link. This came from Reddit, perhaps, entry that I drilled down into a week or so ago. And I've hung on to it because I knew there would be a time for it, and I've just kind of been waiting for that time. There it is. Yeah, it comes from Reddit. it comes from a larger thread that was called I Am a Former Fox News Employee. It's from the IMA series on Reddit, where people ask questions, you know, what do you do, what's your life like? And I read deep down into that thread, and I can't, forgive me, I cannot remember who sent it to me way back in the day. But there was a nugget buried down in that I have hung on to because I knew we would come back around to this conversation sooner or later. Again, the post is 19 days old, posted by one_time_FNC_guy, one_time_FNC_guy. It's titled, I am, paren, another, close paren, former Fox News Channel employee, comma, AMA. And way down into the body of the thread, there's a posting by someone who calls him or herself Mr. Miss Italia. And this is what it says. And this is, and again, this is because we have to understand that Fox are not the only ones who are manipulating our perception of reality. Makes it sound like they're putting LSD in the TV waves or whatever. This is not that. I don't have a little helmet on or anything. Fillings in my teeth or that. What's that? Never mind. But way down in this thread, Mr. Miss Italia posted the following. I work in market research. Fox, Disney, ABC, NBC, all of them are our clients. People think Fox is some arm of the GOP and it's this mass propaganda machine. That's exactly what we want you to think, because it gets you talking about it, gets you watching clips online, clicking on news stories, all the while your eyes are being molested with ads. Notice the choice of words. All the while your eyes are being molested with ads. I wanted to show, bless her heart, Margie had, was funning around with the curling hair straightening iron or whatever and the blow dryer or whatever, and she poked her head in the bedroom and said, hi mom, hi dad, and it was funny. I mean, she knew she was doing funny hair, and she just, and it immediately called to mind, because I'm of a certain age, the hairdo of one Rosanna Thana in the early days of Saturday Night Live. And so I ran over and just typed I got my homo devil box out and typed in Rosanna Dana SNL. And so, boom, I was immediately delivered a clip. And I opened it, and boom, I had to watch an ad for something. And then for some reason or another, the transmission screwed up, and I had to watch the ad again. And you have to give them credit for their genius. You know, with TV, there's TiVo and DVRs and stuff, and you can excise the ads, and you never have to watch any of them, and that's so much further forward than, say, being a 10-year-old little kid standing next to the television with your dad going, turn the channel, can't stand the ads, click, find another one, click, until you find one where there's still some programming, and then with your dad looking at his pocket watch to tell him when 3 minutes was over, okay, go back to channel 3. I kind of lived that. Dad hated commercials, and he passed it on to me. But they've got it figured out on the interweb tubes. If you want to see that Rosanna Dana clip, you are, by God, going to watch their stupid commercial. So when Mr. Miss Italia over at Reddit writes, it gets you watching clips online, clicking on news stories, all the while your eyes are being molested with ads. Fox, and this is the important part, Fox NBC, ABC, CNN are not news organizations. They're advertising organizations. And the reason I hung on to that when I read it, it was like, huh, well, I'm vindicated. Because it's been years now that I've been saying, please understand that you are not being delivered programming. They are delivering you to advertisers. That's why this program so utterly and thoroughly rejects any concept that goes against the idea of this being something in which we are all participating for our own common benefit, pleasure, entertainment, whatever. I'm not, the horn is not, we are not delivering you to any damn body. Okay? And I hope you take me at my sincerest when I say that. We are not delivering you to anyone. This is a safe space that we hope we have created whereby we can have a meaningful conversation about things that matter in our world. But for God's sakes, let me read that again. Fox, NBC, ABC, CNN are not news organizations. They're advertising organizations. Every time you talk about Fox News in social media, Reddit included, that in the horn included, that information gets collected and we use it to best decide how to advertise to you. If you don't like Fox News and don't want it influencing America, don't talk about it. The best thing you can do is ignore it. Don't click links. Don't read, share their outrageous articles, because doing so is exactly what they want. This, of course, is corollary to the ancient maxim that there is no such thing as bad publicity. And granted, by extension, we have to raise funds from you who participate, however you participate, to keep this going. And I hope there is a general understanding that that happens so that we are not delivering in you unto the tender mercies of advertisers. I'm sure if we had a staff, we could go out there and we could find somebody who wanted to advertise Buy Gold Now on this program. We could find someone who wanted to advertise denture goo or hemorrhoid cream or cars or ice cream. And it might even prove to be lucrative. Probably not. But it might. But in that moment, this would cease to be what this was designed to be. A national dialogue, an international discussion, a conversation of meaning and merit and depth. And dare I say it, even gravitas. So, I'm not going to be around to say, you know, we've got to raise $150 tonight, we've got to raise $150. I'm not going to be around to do that for 4 days. So we need all the help we can get. Thank you for a very kind contribution that came in from our buddy Psychoticus. He took care of a day. And that means we've got about $35 to raise to finish Shirley's challenge for tonight. And then tomorrow's taken care of. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, not so much. But that's the only model I got. So just to make that clear, Fox, NBC, ABC, CNN are not news organizations. They are advertising organizations. Let's work in one more call before we call it quits for the night. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Howdy.
This is Edward in Dallas.
Oh, hey, Edward. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been listening to you, enjoying the program, and this is sort of a silly little joke that was told to me by a judge, and I thought, since you were talking about the law and all of that, I might tell you. It was years ago in West Texas, and this young man was reading the law with this old lawyer, and he arrives 7 o'clock in the morning, and the old man is already there, and the old lawyer says, "Now, today, we are going to talk about picking a jury." And the young man says, "Yes, sir." And the old lawyer says, "Now, when you pick the jury, you have got the case won or lost right then." And the young man said, "Yes, sir." And he says, "Now, the first rule of picking the jury is this, and you always do this, never fail. Don't ever pick anybody for a jury that can pucker their mouth tighter than a chicken's asshole." That's a Texas joke.
That sounds Texas. Yeah, there's a West Virginia jury joke out there that I don't have time to tell tonight. I'll just ruin it by telling the punchline. The punchline is, a good goat will do that.
Oh, well, you take care and have a good week, and I'll listen to you next week.
All right, thank you, Edward. You have a wonderful evening.
Well, you do too, and I'll try to call and tell you something dirty again.
I hope you will. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye. Our good buddy Edward in Dallas with a smile and a laugh for the end of the program. Thanks, everybody, for everything you do that makes this such a magnificent experience on, I hope, all from all perspectives. Your kind contributions are what keeps this going. Thank you. I'll be on the road, getting on an aeroplane tomorrow, flying all over the place, and back on Saturday night, and on the air Monday. God willing, the crick don't rise. Keep an eye on the place while I'm gone, would you? I'd appreciate it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky, our moderators in the chat room. Thanks to Sparky, who is the moderator of the Horn Malloy Friday night Skype chat. I haven't been in there in a couple of weeks. I've got to find time to get in there. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to my lovely wife of nearly 20 years, Agnes, for her help with the posts. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, who makes sure that all of this comes across. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. Go there, learn how you can be part of the process that will, in fact, help us end the nightmare in Appalachia. ACHECT.org. Rick Smith is coming up next. Y'all have a wonderful week, and I don't know, I'll be tweeting and Facebooking from the road, hopefully. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
You are listening to the Rick Smith Show.